Welcome to City of Dreams. I'm Dylan Collins with Malt. Hi, Malt.
Hello.
How are you?
Very tired.
Well, wake up.
Shut up.
Eat some cupcakes.
No, I had too many.
Tonight, we are in the 40s, but I couldn't find a decent monologue from 1940, so the first monologue is from 1939. It is from The Wizard of Oz. We had a drop this week.
No.
I know, it's so sad. Let me just check my inbox and make sure it's not in here. And it is not. Okay. So check it, she dropped. I'm going to kick her out of the conversation, but I don't have admin rights to that team, so never mind. Okay. So let me open up the monologues tonight.
I already had them open.
Well, you didn't have to download all of them and get everybody's years and stuff. Because some people are not putting the name of their movie or the year, so I need you guys to make sure to do that. Otherwise, I don't know where to line you guys up. So that sucks. Okay. First is The Wizard of Oz 1939. Screenwriters Noel Langley, Florence Ryerson, and Edgar Allan Wolff. Do you want? It's the I'm melting monologue. Do you want to read the introduction to it?
Do you say read the introduction? You were lagging.
Oh, yeah. Do you want to read the introduction to it?
Sure. All right. All right. Sorry.
It's okay.
Okay. I'm melting. Play clip expert. Excerpt. Can't even talk. I'm so tired. The Wizard of Oz. The death scene of the green-faced, cackling Wicked Witch of the West, played by Margaret Hamilton, when Dorothy Gale, played by Judy Garland, accidentally doused her with water when trying to put out the Scarecrow's, played by Ray Bolger's fire from her broomstick.
Alright.
Hope you all understood that, because I don't even think I did.
Also, I need you guys to put the name of yourself in the file as well, because I have a lot that just say The Wizard of Oz. and I have a bunch that just say It's a Wonderful Life. So, I have to go back into my email real quick to figure out who's who. So yeah, there are more than two people on this monologue. Let's see. All right, I figured out the first person.
All right.
So Axeldin is on this monologue, so we're going to listen to him first. Axeldin playing the Wicked Witch. Let's listen.
Well, ring around the rosy, a pocket full of spears. Thought you'd be pretty foxy, didn't you? Well, the last to go will see the first three go before her. And her mangy little dog, too. How about a little fire, Scarecrow? You cursed brat, look what you've done. I'm melting. Oh, what a world. Who would have thought that some little girl like you could destroy my beautiful wickedness? No. I'm going.
That was Axeldin, which according to him, The Wizard of Oz came out in 1993.
Yeah, my birth year.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so if nobody else is on this monologue, they will get 5 points. I don't know that I mentioned that this is a 5-point monologue. Is anybody else on the monologue, Malt?
Well, you already spoiled that earlier.
Yes, I did.
Yes, there is.
Okay, who's next?
Next up is Janie Gurley.
All right.
Rosie, a pocket's full of spears. Thought you'd be pretty foxy, didn't ya? Well, the last to go will see the first three go before. And her mangy little dog, too. How about a little fire, Scarecrow? Oh, you cursed brats! Look what you've done! I'm melting! Oh, what a world! Who would have thought that such a little girl like you could destroy my beautiful wickedness? Oh, I'm going!
one. That was Janie Gurley, 07, or whatever her number is. I don't know. All right, we have one more person on this monologue, and it is Temporary Butterfly.
Ooh, Temp.
Yeah, let's listen to her.
Well, ring around the rosy, a pocket full of spits. Thought you'd be pretty foxy, didn't ya? Well, the last to go will see the first three go before her. And a mangy little dog, too. How about a little fire scarecrow? You cursed brat! Look what you've done! I'm melting! Oh, what a world! Who would have thought that some little girl like you could destroy my beautiful wickedness? Oh, no! I'm going!
Okay, so we had Axelden, we had Janie Gurley, and we had Temporary Butterfly on the Wizard of Oz monologue. We'll go monologue by monologue and say a couple our thoughts, and then we'll say who we thought won. Did you pick a winner?
Yeah, I think I did.
I did as well. Axelden, let's start with Axelden.
All right, you first or me?
I'll go first. I didn't have much for him, but it sounded like a stoner witch. You were very, like, laid back, and I needed more evil from you, Axel. And I think if you'd have had more evil and more, like, energy for this, it would have been really strong. It wasn't bad, but it kind of sounded like a stoner witch. What did you think?
I actually said, like, I really did like that laugh. I loved that laugh. The slight southernish accent threw me off a bit with the character, but I can't really say anything about that because, I don't know, my Cranston accent might throw people off, so. But I feel like with the death scene, like with the death at the end, there wasn't enough emotion, but I really liked how he fully devoted himself to it.
All right, Janie Gurley 07, what did you think?
Oh, me first, okay. Janie, once again, I have, holy crap, that laugh. I really love how you fully, like, brought yourself into that voice. I loved the attitude, and I thought there was a lot of emotion in the death, but it could have been a bit more death-y.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I still wanted more energy and the wickedness, but you had some epic laughs. I loved your laughs. I loved your voice. The beginning of the monologue, there were a couple, like, I couldn't really understand what you were saying. You had some enunciating problems, and maybe because you were doing that voice. I don't know, but I really did like the voice, and I liked the laugh a lot. Let's talk about Temp. Temp, yours was pretty win. You had, like, the evilness and the laugh. I really, really liked this one. What did you think?
I have it like that she had, like, the most evil feel to it, and I loved that. It was very, like, angry and bitter and wicked witchy. But it was a bit hard to understand for me at some points, and the laugh seemed a bit strained.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just have this note that at the end, the death scene seemed a bit orgasm-y.
At least she committed.
Yeah, I liked
Maybe that. When witches die, they have orgasms. Did you ever think about that, Malt?
I didn't. I'm just probably a cruel person who can't think of anything different.
It's a known fact. That's part of the witch lore.
Oh, damn it.
So. I picked a winner. Did you pick a winner?
I did pick a winner.
Okay, well, for me, Janie had the best laugh, but overall, my favorite was Temp.
Hmm.
What about you?
I think that with the devotion to the voice and that laugh in it, I think I might go with Janie for this.
Okay, well, that is 2.5 points they're splitting. So 2.5 points go to the utterly absurdists. I'm going to make a note. And well, it looks like 21.5. 2.5 points. I'll just type 2.5. That's better. And 2.5 points go to Team Oscar. And we are now for 1941, Citizen Kane, 8 points. Nobody did this monologue.
No one did.
So Malt's going to do it.
Oh, I am?
Yes. Screenwriters Herman J. Mankiewicz and Orson Welles speech to executives on the Inquirer's success. Charles Foster Kane gave a speech to his newspaper executives, played by Orson Welles originally. A lot of people were confused about this. If you ever see a monologue with the other guy in parentheses, it means that person doesn't talk. You're just supposed to take a short pause and then react.
All right, then.
You want to do it, Maude?
Sure.
Do it!
Reading through it really quick, skimming, make sure I get the right emotion. Alright. 6 years ago, I looked at a picture of the world's greatest newspapermen. I felt like a kid in front of a candy store. Well, tonight, 6 years later, I got my candy. All of it. Welcome, gentlemen, to the New Enquirer. Make up an extra copy of that picture and send it to the Chronicle, will you please? It'll make you all happy to learn that our circulation this morning was the greatest in New York. 684,000. Right. Having thus welcomed you, I hope you'll forgive my rudeness in taking leave of you. I'm going abroad next week for vacation. I've promised my doctor for some time now that I'd leave when I could, and I now realize that I can't. You can't blame me, Mr. Bernstein. They've been making statues for 2,000 years, and I've only been buying for 5. I promise you, Mr. Bernstein. Mr. Bernstein, you don't expect me to keep any of those promises, do you?
So that's the one nobody did.
No one did it, you nope. Losers.
Ugh, 8 points to Malt.
Woo! Team Malt.
Team Malt. Team Malt and Aaron and Dylan. We are the Team Cupcakes.
Yeah.
Next monologue, Pride of the Yankees, 1942, worth 1 point. Lou Gehrig's Luckiest Man, Farewell Address to Baseball, screenwriters Joe Swirling and Herman J. Mankiewicz. I'll read this one because nobody did it. Set it up for me, Malt. I'm ready.
All right. Lou Gehrig's Luckiest Man, Farewell Address to Baseball, top pick. Play clip.
You don't have to read
the
that
Pride
stuff.
Of the Yankees.
That's
I don't
useless.
Care. I'm reading it. It's in there.
All right. That's not in mine.
Well, it's in mine, so...
Well, that's your own fault.
Whatever.
Okay, go ahead.
Dying ball player Lou Gehrig delivered a farewell speech in the New York Yankees baseball stadium to 62,000 fans.
I have been walking on ball fields for 16 years, and I never received anything but kindness and encouragement from you fans. I have had the great honor to have played with these great veteran ball players to my left. Murderers Row, our championship team of 1927. I have had the further honor of living with and playing with these men on my right, the Bronx Bombers, the Yankees of the day. I have been given fame and undeserved praise by the boys up there behind the wire in the press box, my friends the sports writers. I have worked under the two greatest managers of all time, Miller Huggins and Joe McCarthy. I have a mother and a father who fought to give me health and the solid background of my youth. I have a wife, a companion for life, who has shown me more courage than I ever knew. People all say I've had a bad break, but today I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
Oh, that made me cough. Okay, back to what we're... Okay, 1943, the Oxbow Incident, worth 3 points. Ooh. Screenwriters Lamar Trotty, lynched man's dying letter... The Heartbreaking Reading, posthumously, I probably didn't pronounce that word right, posthumously by Gil Carter, originally played by Henry Fonda, of a letter written by a lynched man, Donald Martin, originally played by Dan Andrews, to his wife. And this first person on this monologue is Jeffers. Let's listen.
A man just naturally can't take the law into his own hands and hang people without hurting everybody in the world. Because then, he's just not breaking one law, but all laws. Law is a lot more than words you put in a book, or judges, or lawyers, or sheriffs you hired to carry it out. It's everything people have ever found out about justice and what's right and wrong. It's the very conscience of humanity. There can't be any such thing as civilization unless people have a conscience. Because if people touch God anywhere... Where is it except through their conscience? And what is anybody's conscience except a little piece of the conscience of all men that ever lived? I guess that's all I've got to say except Kiss the babies for me, and God bless you.
That was Jeffers.
Jeffers.
So, if nobody else is on this monologue, 3 points go to Team Heaven Sucks. And by the way, at the start of the show, Team Utterly Absurd was in the lead with 24, Team Bollywood 18, Team Oscar 18, and Team Heaven Sucks 8. Was anyone else on the monologue?
There was not.
That means 3 points go to Team Heaven Sucks. They are catching up. They already have more points this episode than anyone else. So nice. What do you think about that?
I think that's pretty cool. We never know which way this is going to go.
Exactly. And with Team Oscar short a person, they could really catch up. So we'll see. We'll see. We are moving now. 1944. The Curse of the Cat, people.
Ooh.
Screenwriter DeWitt Bodine. The Headless Horseman legend. Do you want to set up the Headless Horseman legend? Don't read the play audio clips and stuff.
Okay. All right. Aging reclusive actress Mrs. Julia Farron enacted her version of the Headless Horseman tale to young blonde Amy Reed.
Okay. We
I
know.
Like how it's young blonde Amy Reed.
Young blonde Amy Reed. That was very important to the story, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen this movie?
I've not.
I have not either. I kind of want to. I'm interested.
And I'm just very interested in this Curse of the Cat people.
Yes. It's worth 4 points. We know that Sundance Girl is on it. Trigatree's asking me if it's okay to still submit. As we said at the beginning, if her monologue is... We haven't done it yet. She can still submit. What is your monologue for? We'll find out live.
Do. No, I'd punch myself if I did that whole thing.
Do it.
No. Now it's in my head. Crap.
The monologue is for Third Man, which we have not done yet, so yes.
Woo!
She's going to send me the version she had done before the deadline. So, whatever. Alright. Okay. Sundance Girl is on this Curse of the Cat People monologue, we know, so we're going to listen to her first.
All right.
All right, let's do it.
I'll tell you a story. A lovely story. Do you know the story of the Headless Horseman? You live right here in Tarrytown and you don't know the legend of Sleepy Hollow? Then you must hear it. I shall tell it to you. There, now you sit there. Now we'll pretend this is a stage. The Headless Horseman. It was shot off long ago in the great battles that were fought here, with the British on one side and the Americans on the other. On the dark nights, on the stormy nights, you can hear him. He passes like the wind and the flapping and fluttering of his great cloak, beating like gaunt wings. And the thunder of his horse's hooves is loud and loud and louder. At the midnight hour, down the road that leads to Sleepy Hollow, across the bridge, he goes galloping, galloping, galloping. Always searching, always seeking. And if you stand on the bridge at the wrong hour, the hour when he rides, his great cloak sweeps around you. He swings you to his saddle bow. And then forever you must ride. And always his cold arms around you, clasping you into the cavity of his bony chest. And then forever you must ride. And ride. And ride. With the Headless Horseman.
That was Sundance Girl. Is anyone else on the monologue?
Let me check. 1944, Curse of the Cat People. There is one more person.
Who is it?
It is Melly.
Okay, let's listen to Melly.
I'll tell you a story. A lovely story. Do you know the story of the Headless Horseman? You live right here in Tarryton, and you don't know the legend of Sleepy Hollow. Then you must hear it. I shall tell it to you. Now, you sit there, and now we'll pretend that this is the stage. The Headless Horseman. It was shot off long ago in the great battles that were fought here, with the British on one side and the Americans on the other. On the dark nights, on the stormy nights, you can hear him. He passes like the wind, and the flapping and fluttering of his great cloak is like the beating of gaunt wings, and the thunder of his horse's hooves is loud and loud and louder. At the midnight hour, down the road that leads to Sleepy Hollow across the bridge, he goes galloping and galloping and galloping, always searching, always seeking. If you stand on the bridge at the wrong hour, the hour when he rides by, his great cloak sweeps around you. He swings you into his saddle bow, and then forever you must ride, and always his cold arms around you, clasping you into the cavity of his bony chest. And then forever you must ride and ride and ride with the Headless Horseman.
That was Melly.
Melly.
This is 4 points if anybody... Is anybody else on this one?
Is there anybody else on this one?
Is there anybody else on this one?
It's not.
Okay, so... What did you think of Sundance Girl?
For Sundance Girl, I have... The pacing was a little sporadic with the pauses, but... Sorry, I'm tripping over my own tongue and I'm not even talking. Alright. I found it interesting that you whispered the words galloping. And... Sorry, I'm like not even able to read my own notes right now. You had a really good quality to your voice and it made it more chilling. And I thought that was really cool with this.
I really liked your read on it. It was freaking creepy and I kind of got a Norma Desmond vibe to it. Like this aging actress... and I could tell from your read that this character was really trying to scare the younger girl. And, I liked the whisper on galloping too. I really liked the choices you made. You made strong choices and I really liked it overall. What did you think of Melly?
For Melly, I liked the pacing on this one. Like, and the croakiness of the voice made it sound older. So I thought that was really cool. Along with, like, it was the opposite with the word galloping in this one. Like, you sounded, like, you went louder with the words louder, and you, like, got a little hectic with the words galloping. And I thought that was a really interesting choice as well. So it's, like, kind of, I liked them both in that different way. So that made it tough.
Yeah. And, oh, sorry.
No, and I just have one little thing. This is another monologue tonight that I've heard that it sounds almost seductive at the end.
I think it's just you. There's something going on with you tonight.
Maybe. I don't know. I think I just have a crush on everyone on VH right now.
Probably. Yeah, Melly went kind of the opposite route with her. She went kind of more subdued, and I liked her take on it, too. It was a really... This one was a tough choice for me.
It was a really tough
choice. I liked how you kind of read it more quietly, Melly, and I also liked the age you put in your voice. For me, the winner of this is Sundance Girl. What about you?
For me, it was Melly.
Which is not on the same page tonight.
We are not.
Well, 2 points go to Team Heaven Sucks, and 2 points go to Team Oscar. Oh, wow, it's the same two teams that split the points. Let me make sure these are on the right teams.
At least people know that we're not conspiring.
Yeah, Team Oscar has Melly on it, and Team... Let me make sure Team Heaven Sucks has someone with Sundance Girl on it. Yes. Okay. all right. Let's go to 1945, The Lost Weekend. Screenwriters Charles Bracken and Billy Wilder. I love Billy Wilder stuff, so I'm excited. The Empowering Benefits of Booze. At 3:45 p.m., alcoholic New York City writer Don Burnham, played by Ray Milland, was deluded about how drinking improved his mind. Spoken to a bartender, Nat, played by Howard Da Silva, in his favorite Third Avenue bar near 42nd Street. Is anybody on this monologue? It's worth 7 points.
All right, interrupting me. Gosh.
Sorry.
There is someone on this monologue.
Oh, who is it?
It is Rochelle Yulari.
Rochelle's doing a monologue about being drunk?
Apparently.
Wow. It's method acting. Okay. So we're going to listen to Rochelle Yulari. Actually, we'll start part two with Rochelle Yulari, I think.
All right.
So stay tuned.